After the time of Deborah and Barak, once again, the children of Israel did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. If you've been following my series on the judges in ancient Israel, this should sound familiar to you. Israel fell into apostasy, but when they finally cried out to God, he sent a judge to be the instrument of deliverance, Gideon. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. The story of Gideon covers three chapters in the Bible, so I'm just going to touch on the highlights and draw our attention to some really interesting aspects of the story. Then I'd like to conclude by looking at the story of Gideon metaphorically, so we can glean some key principles for today. Because Israel was disobedient, God allowed the Midianites to oppress Israel. The Midianites were actually related to the Israelites. They were descendants of Abraham through Keturah, the woman Abraham married after Sarah died. The covenant was with Israel, so the Midianites were not part of the covenant people. Neither were other descendants of Abraham, such as Ishmael, Edom, Ammon, or Moab. The covenant promises were through Isaac. The strategy of the Midianites was simple. They allowed Israel to do all of the hard work of plowing, planting, and tilling to raise up a new crop. When it was time for the harvest, the Midianites would come and take away the harvest. The Midianites were like grasshoppers because of their multitude, and they stole the harvest, leaving Israel impoverished as a result. Israel was left to hide in holes and hideouts in the mountains, in caves and strongholds, while the Midianites occupied the best of the land. So think about how bad Israel must have been for God to let his people fall into the hands of the Midianites for 7 years. But this was Israel's fault. They lost God's protection because they did evil in the sight of the Lord. The arrogant enemies should have been subdued by Israel, but instead Israel, because of its sin, was basically reduced to beggary. Finally, they cried out to the Lord, and the Lord sent a prophet to remind Israel that God had delivered them from the Egyptians and drove out the inhabitants of the land in order to give the land to Israel. He told them not to fear the gods of the Amorites, because he was Israel's God, but they had not obeyed his voice. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon. Gideon, the son of Joash, lived in Ophrah. He was threshing wheat in a winepress to hide it from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord said to him, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." The Hebrew can also be translated as a mighty warrior. Now, this is a very interesting comment for the angel of the Lord to make. We don't know much about Gideon, but the fact that he was trying to hide the threshing of the wheat seems like the opposite of valor. Many commentators believe that the angel of the Lord was speaking in faith to build Gideon up for the task ahead. But the fact that he was trying to do something, anything, to keep food on the table was actually admirable. He was beating the grain under an oak in a sheltered vat used for pressing grapes. This location may have been sufficient to beat out the grain, but it would have been very difficult to separate the grain from the chaff, which was typically done in an open space with wind. Gideon would have to wait for a very windy day, or else go to an open area and to separate the grain from the chaff quickly. So on the surface, Gideon's actions may seem cowardly because he was covertly harvesting in a wine press. But considering that Israel's harvests had been plundered for 7 years and they were probably starving, one could view Gideon as being very brave for trying to do something in these dire conditions. It may have been a feeble attempt, but at least he had enough determination to do something. After the angel of the Lord told Gideon that God was with him, Gideon politely replied something that many of us have asked when trouble has befallen us. If the Lord is with us, then why has all of this happened to us? Gideon wondered why he and the rest of Israel weren't seeing the wonders of God like their ancestors. Gideon claimed that they were abandoned by God and given into the hand of Midian. Now, God did not answer Gideon's assertion, and it seems odd that Gideon would not have understood why God had given Israel over to the Midianites, considering that his own father practiced idolatry. But the Lord did not answer the accusation. In verse 14, the word angel is absent, and the writer says that the Lord turned to Gideon and told him to go in this thy strength, for he was being sent by the Lord. This points to the strength that Gideon had just been given through the promise of God. Gideon tried to protest that he was from a poor family and he was the least in his father's house. He was saying that he basically had no status to be leading people. But the Lord assured Gideon that he would be with him. Gideon asked for a sign and then asked the angel of the Lord to tarry while he got a gift ready. Gideon prepared a present of a goat and unleavened cakes. For someone from a poor family, this was a generous gift. When he laid them on a rock, the angel of the Lord put forth the end of his staff, touched the food, and a fire rose up from out of the rock and consumed the food. Now that was a pretty amazing sign. God had given Gideon the reassurance that he needed. Gideon responded with humility by building an altar there. But then he was immediately tested to see if he would obey by destroying his father's idolatrous altar and grove. God wanted Gideon to literally clean house. At night, because Gideon feared his father's household and the men of the city, Gideon and 10 servants destroyed his father's altar of Baal and cut down the grove by it. The next morning, the men of the city were understandably angry, and they wanted Gideon's father, Joash, to hand over his son so Gideon could be killed. Remember that people in the ancient Near East believed that deities inhabited the images that represented them. Even though the object was made with human hands, they believed that through an elaborate process, the god could indwell his spirit or breath into the image. Once an image had been transformed into a god, the expectation is that it would be able to defend itself. If a desecration took place, the deity should defend itself. In this case, Joash defended Gideon by arguing that Baal should have defended himself. Joash responded to the angry people by asking them, "Are you going to plead Baal's cause? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death." Basically, if someone took retribution into their own hands in this situation by punishing Gideon, then they would be guilty of bloodshed and subject to retribution by the clan. Because it was up to Baal to defend himself. Then Joash called his son Jerubbaal, a name which probably means "let Baal contend." Then all of the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east gathered together in the valley of Jezreel. The Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Now the verb "came upon" literally means to put on or to clothe. God's Spirit covered Gideon like clothing to equip him for God's purpose. So Gideon went forth in the power of the Spirit. Gideon blew the trumpet and sent messengers to various tribes. And then he famously fleeced God. First, he asked for the fleece to be wet and the ground around it to be dry. The next morning, it was so. This actually wasn't that unusual because a fleece would tend to gather any moisture in the air during the night, even if the ground around it was kind of dry. But there was so much dew in the fleece that Gideon could wring out a bowl full of water, so the quantity was certainly extraordinary. Then Gideon tested God again by asking for the fleece to be dry and the ground all around it to be covered in dew, and this would be something very unusual. The next morning, it was so. Gideon was testing God to prove that God would save Israel by Gideon's hand. God would be the Savior and Gideon his instrument. But the Lord told Gideon that he had too many soldiers, or else Israel would claim the victory themselves. So Gideon allowed those who were fearful and afraid to return home. Shockingly, 22,000 left, and there remained only about 10,000. But God said that that was still too many. So Gideon had to divide the soldiers depending on how they drank water. 300 men took water in the hollow of their hand and lapped it like a dog. The others knelt down to drink. Now, there's a lot of debate as to the meaning of this test. It has been suggested that those who lapped the water were better soldiers because they didn't allow themselves to kneel down and drink comfortably. But instead, they scooped the water up in their hands and lapped it from their hands while standing in all of their gear, strengthening themselves for the battle with nourishment while also remaining vigilant. It's interesting that God built up Gideon's faith by doing the fleece test twice, giving Gideon assurance and confidence that God would be with him. But then, after having his faith strengthened, God had his faith tested because God reduced his army from 32,000 to an astonishing 300 men to ensure that none of the Israelites could try to claim the glory of the victory for themselves. God wanted to be sure that the people knew that only his presence could ensure victory. The Midianites, Amalekites, and children of the east looked like grasshoppers because of their multitude. Gideon divided the 300 men into three groups. Every man held a trumpet, which would have been a ram's horn, and an empty pitcher with a lamp inside. Then they snuck near the camp of the enemy, blew their trumpets, broke their pitchers, held their lamps up, and yelled, "The sword of Yahweh and of Gideon!" The host fled, and the Israelites pursued them. Now later there was some squabbling with the men of Ephraim, who chided Gideon for not calling them to fight, but Gideon was able to smooth it over. Now Gideon and his soldiers were tired and hungry after the battle. He asked the princes of Succoth for bread, and they refused. They asked Gideon, "Do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession?" This alludes to the ancient Near Eastern military practice of cutting off the hands of captives and then taking them back to the base in order to count the number of casualties. The men of Penuel also refused to give Gideon's troops any nourishment, and Gideon threatened the men of both cities. By refusing to help Gideon's army, they were basically allying themselves with Israel's enemy. After successfully capturing the two rulers of Midian, Gideon kept his promise to punish the two cities for refusing to give nourishment to his troops. Then Gideon told his eldest son to kill the two princes of Midian. But he was young and fearful, so Gideon did it. After Gideon's victory, the men of Israel offered to have Gideon rule over them as a king. But Gideon refused. He answered, "I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. Yahweh will rule over you." And this, of course, was the perfect answer. But then, interestingly, Gideon asked the soldiers to donate the golden earrings from the conquered enemy. He also collected the purple raiment from the dead rulers and the chains from their camels' necks. From these, Gideon made an ephod and put it in his city in Ophrah, and all Israel went thither a whoring after it, which thing became a snare unto Gideon and to his house. He made an ephod. This may have been a copy of the ephod worn by the high priest when serving God. It's possible that Gideon initially had good intentions when he made it, possibly as a reminder or memorial of Israel's victory over Midian, but it was not authorized by God. The term ephod could also refer to costly garments that were worn by high officials or even draped over an image of a god. In this case, the word ephod could refer not only to the garments, but to the idol wearing the garments, because the Bible says that Israel went a-whoring, which means that what Gideon made became an object of worship and veneration, like an idol. And it was spiritually disastrous. Now, also interestingly, although Gideon had appeared to reject the Israelites' invitation to rule over them, many commentators note how his actions after that were very much like a typical Near Eastern king. He claimed most of the plunder for himself. He took the purple garments of the Midianite rulers. He established a national cult center with the ephod as a divine image. He established a large harem and fathered 70 sons, and one of his sons was named Abimelech, which means father is king. So now that we know the elements of the story, let's look at them for a few moments metaphorically to glean some important spiritual principles. John Phillips provides some insightful commentary. Midian can be viewed as a type of the world, and Amalek as a type of the flesh. The world turns people into objects to make money off of them. You may remember that the Midianites are mentioned in Genesis chapter 37 in relation to Joseph. They bought Joseph for 20 pieces of silver and sold him into Egypt. They were merchants, and the only thing they could see in Joseph, God's anointed, was a marketable commodity. They only cared about how much money they could make off of him. The world uses, steals, and destroys. Like Israel, year after year, we work on cultivating a harvest of souls, only to have the world try to steal them away. Just when we think we're all done with the sowing, watering, cultivating, and toiling, the world comes and tries to steal the harvest. Unfortunately, sometimes there are Midianites, even in our churches, claiming to be kin to God's people, but all they really want is money and power. And just like the Midianites and the Amalekites worked together, the world and the flesh work together. They offer lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And they lure so many of our young people. When Gideon was in the wine press trying to do anything he could to salvage the harvest, the angel of the Lord gave him a word. It was a fresh word from God that brought revival. God saw that Gideon's faith was weak and gave him a sign by consuming the gift with fire. Then Gideon had to obey God and clean out the idolatry in his own family. So God gave Gideon a word and a sign, and then Gideon obeyed by removing the idolatry. However, no sooner had Gideon faithfully done his best to remove the idolatry, and then the Midianites and the Amalekites, the world and the flesh, worked together to attack. The world and the flesh do not let go easily. Gideon responded by looking to man for support. He wanted to rally people, which isn't a bad thing, but he just needed God's help. Further, he asked God for additional signs by fleecing him. God had already given Gideon an amazing sign by fire consuming the gift, but Gideon wanted more because his faith was weak. This was a dark time of struggle for Gideon, so God went ahead and tried to help his feeble faith by giving him the signs he asked for. But we need to be careful, because a faith that seeks signs will always seek more. Next, God's plan was to reduce the size of the army, because if Gideon had won the victory with so many, he would have taken the glory for it. Those who lacked courage were sent home. Then those who got on their knees to drink and showed that they cared more about their physical needs than the enemy, they were sent home as well. And then God showed Gideon that the battle was already won. Gideon overheard two Midianite soldiers talking about how God had delivered Midian into the hand of Gideon. God had already won the battle in the minds of the enemy. Gideon just had to go down and take back the land that the enemy had ruined for so long. And God confounded Israel's enemies by the light that was hidden in earthen vessels. When the vessels were broken, the light shone forth. Once we are broken before God, our light can shine, and light always drives out the darkness. Gideon and the Israelites were victorious, but then there was some internal squabbling with the Ephraimites. When God's people should be rejoicing, it's easy to be tempted by jealousy, pride, sarcasm, spitefulness, anger, and resentment. Even when there's a victory, the devil wastes no time in trying to stir up more trouble. Gideon also had to deal with the unsupportive men of Succoth and Penuel, who were compromisers. They wouldn't take a side in the fight until they knew who was going to win. And Gideon punished them, but not as much as the enemy. Gideon asked the Midianite princes who they slew at Tabor, and they said, "As thou art, so were they. Each one resembled the children of a king." Gideon knew his brethren had been taken out by the enemy, so his answer was to put an end to the enemy once and for all. He asked his eldest son to do it, hoping that the next generation could decisively deal with the problem, but his son wasn't ready. So Gideon, representing the older and mature generation, had to do it. But then Gideon, after everything he'd been through and everything God had done, became covetous. Even a good, godly person can be corrupted by their own victory and by the esteem of the brethren. Gideon had declined being a king, yet he acted like one by developing a very carnal lifestyle. And even worse, by creating an ephod, he acted like a priest. They made a god out of a garment, and Israel played the harlot with it. Gideon's victory brought freedom and peace to Israel for 40 years during his lifetime as a judge, and Gideon died after living to an old age. But the conclusion of the story is a tragic repetition we've already seen multiple times. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and went a whoring after Balaam and made Baal-berith their god. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of all their enemies on every side. Neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, namely Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had showed unto Israel. What a tragic ending to a story full of hope and promise initially. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.